So the practices that we began with today of just being present in the body, being present in the senses, and really noticing how the body is like the points both ways. It points out into the world and into the inner world. And our senses, when we come into our senses really bring us here, just into this room, but they also bring us into connection with the inner world. So there's that sense of touching the outer world, touching the inner world, hearing the outer world, hearing the inner world, and the senses really, the body is the bridge really between the between the inner and the outer. And what we went on to do then is to use these exercises from the Kabbalah to bring kind of energy and balance into the body. The Kabbalistic cross ritual, tiny little ritual, but it holds within it that whole sense of bringing the unmanifest light into full manifestation and balancing the opposites. Balancing the sense of clarity with compassion or will and love. And really it's about, and then bringing that to the center point of the inner sun, which is the kind of the, if you like, the reflection point and the mediation point between the outermost and the innermost. And then extending that as a blessing into the world. So that little ritual holds a great deal. We went on then to work with this further practice of internalizing the Tree of Life, which, and I will talk more about that after our lunch. The Kabbalah can be very complicated, but is also very simple. It is a kind of integrating image. And so the middle pillar, it consists of these centers, one that is the center of Keter above the head, that is the crown of creation, that's the place of the unmanifest light. So this is the light descending into our bodies. The throat is the place of expression. It's the place where where light comes into form. So that's place of speaking. And you find that in many different traditions about the word being spoken, the divine word. In Hinduism, it's the vak, the speaking of Brahman. In Islamic Christianity, in the beginning is the word, and the word was with God, and the word is God. And then, so this is this place of mystical expression and the place where we move from between the movement, really bridging place between duality and non-duality. We come down into the sphere of the heart, which is the place of balance, the place of location, the place of reflection between above and below, between left and right, between opposites. That's why it's called in Kabbalah Tiferet, the place of balance and beauty. Then come down further into the body, into the moving center of the Yesod. Yesod means foundation. Now the pelvis and the hips is the moving center of our body. Those of us who are older may notice the struggle we have around that, and the struggle around movement, you know, and here in the Kabbalah, thinks of the foundation as connected to the almighty power of life, and it is that enormous life energy, not just sexuality, but the energy of life itself that's centered in the pelvis. And then we come down into Malkut, which is the earth center, the magnetic center, which is the parallel to Keter, which is the crown center. Here we have the power of the earth. This is the thing that Ellen Thomas talks about, the green fuse that drives the flower, drives my poor heart. It's that great energy of life that rises up. And so having established the middle pillar, what we then do is work with the light, bring the light around to the front of our body, the back of our body, the left of our body, the right of our body. We spin the light as a spiral around our body, like we bring the light as a straight arrow down into the earth. And then finally we work with this exercise called the fountain, where we gather the earth energy, we bring it up to Keter, and then we fountain it around our whole sphere of experience. Now these exercises I've been doing for 50 odd years now, and they can feel a bit mechanical at first and until you just get the hang of it, because in that sense that what you're doing is integrating the imagination, integrating the intention imagination with breath and body. And what that does is that it acts very gently to wake up our body's energies, to open our system up. And having done that, and having brought ourselves into a kind of different state, then what I did was to sort of invite the archangels to create what's called in the Kabbalah the temple not made by hands, which is the a sense of the energetic field that surrounds us as and protects us as we then take another movement. Because what we then do, we come back into the center point, and we tip our awareness in towards the inner. We've been working with the inner in relationship to our bodies, right? So we've been working with imagination, working with energy, bringing the inside and the outside very literally together in our bodies. But then we tip our attention inwards, letting our senses fold with us. And in this instance, where we went, as many places we can go when we do that, when we approach the inner planes. But what we did this time is to look at the sun, a form that we're going to explore in various ways, that's called the house of life. Now this, in a sense, is our own inner structure, our own mediation points for the inner worlds. Now, because of what we're doing, that this structure will have has within it certain archetypal images that are relevant to the work that we're exploring. So one of the places we went to, first place we went to, is the inner representation of the heart center of Tiferet. And this has a round table with a veiled grail at its center. So the object at the center is the grail. What is the grail? No one knows what the grail is. The whole thing about the grail, if you read the Arthurian legends, they say, oh, it's like a spear, it's like a sword, it's like a dish, it's like a cup. It's like the most important thing you can say about the grail is that which does not regenerate is not the grail. It's quite an interesting phrase, but it's that which does not regenerate is not the grail. So you can't exactly say what the grail is, but you know where the grail has not been. So wherever regeneration has not happened, well, that is not the grail. So the object of mystery at the center that is linked to this figure who is the teacher of the table, who is the keeper of the grail, starts to connect our own house of life to this great myth that we're going to explore. Now what we become aware of as we sit at the table, as we contemplate the grail, is above, in the roof just above us in this room, there is this rose of white and red and gold. And then this sense of there is this current coming and going in the house of life, which makes us aware that there are floors above us, there are floors below us. So in a certain sense, having established ourselves in the heart center, we then descend down into the basement of our being, down into something literally into bedrock, into basalt rock. And there we find this archaic altar, this horned altar, which I sent you all pictures of, so you'd have some idea of what that looks like. And in the beginning, so we're right in the sense of when it's been shaped, because it is the basement, but it is also bedrock, volcanic rock. So we're aware really of the great fire of the earth. And as we place our hands upon the altar, there is a great shift of energy. The altar changes from black to white. There's an interlocking pattern on the altar of six pointed stars that opens up, and this great earth fire ascends that is met by an almond, the carving of an almond flower in the roof. We'll talk more about this later. And what then happens is a sense of this rainbow, this light energy of fire energy rising up through the house of life, energizing all the rooms. And then it's like we then follow that by going up another stairway. The first stairway descends, goes anti-clockwise, spirally, and is watery and cool. And we're in this warm, fiery spiral. The first of all takes us to the antechamber of the chamber of the moon, which is Yesod. And there we start to look at our book of images, the images that we have collected in our life. There is a further step in that room which we will look at this afternoon, but we're not there just yet. As we follow the spiral stair, we could of course return to the room of the table and the mirror, but for now we ascend to a very strange room, into a place of Da'at, a cube within a cube that has these Hebrew letters rotating within it, and has in itself the sense of paradox but enormous stillness. And as we enter into this stillness, we become aware of the white sun of Keter above the house of life. And then as we enter into this paradoxical place, we become aware that we are both in the house of life and sitting here in our bodies. And so we enter into that bridging mystery of being here and there. And then what we did was just to tip our attention forwards into the room, being the house of life, being here. Now the effect of that exercise is to wake up the kind of, if you like, the inner chambers of our being. We're going to continue working with it in different ways. And it's in a certain sense, it's like an alchemical tower. There are other rooms that will appear that are linked to the other spheres of the Tree of Life. The whole point about the study of Kabbalah, and in this context and in any real context, is this is an experiential process. So this whole idea of becoming the green and burning tree is, this is how we become the green and burning tree. We connect to the inner energy, the fiery energy that's right at the heart of our being. We allow that energy to flower in our lives so that our lives become fertilized, so that sense of the, as Dylan Thomas would say, the fire that drives the green fuse through the flower into the flower drives my pure heart. We're connecting with that practice, bringing the light through, bringing the fire up, wakening up our bodies and waking up our lives. And right at the heart of that idea, right at the heart of this practice of awakening, of revivifying, is the process that in the Arthurian myth they talk about the reviving of the wasteland, the irrigating of the wasteland, that is both the literally the if you like the awakening of the earth, the awakening of the wasteland, the healing of the wasteland within us. And has at its heart a connection to what we might call a quality of fiery hope. The Arthurian myth comes out of the sense of disaster, and the longing for the king who will come to balance the world, to make the world right again. It's the same myth you get in the myth of the Messiah or the coming of the Christ. And it's based upon a fiery quality of hope. Hope is a curious thing. Often we say, I hope it'll happen, meaning I don't think it's going to happen. Hope is often like, it can be a collapsed thing, like, oh no, this isn't going to work. I hope it will, but I know it won't really. Fiery hope is a hope with confidence. Now in Welsh tradition, the beginning, the roots really of that later becomes Arthur, is the longing for the Mab Daragan, the son of prophecy. that the and it's related to the very ancient myth of Mabon, son of Modron, who was stolen from between his mother and the wall. And so the coming of the child, like the coming of the Christ child, is the coming of that which the hope that, and the belief and the faith that something is coming can be that will heal, that will not just heal but will renew. And you find that then in the images of things like Camelot, even in some of the iterations of I can't remember the song. That dreadful, dreadful to me. Apologies, you like musicals. I hate musicals, but the musical Camelot, where Camelot, where the rain just rains in the night, and it's the perfect. But it's not my favourite expression of a myth, to be quite honest. But it is drawing upon the centre point of that myth, of the building of the New Jerusalem on earth, the creation of balance and beauty. From the places of chaos and destruction. So at the heart of the myth, really, is this fiery kind of hope. Curiously, in Tolkien's myth, the figure Aragorn, who is the king figure, his first name is given by the elves is Estel, which means hope, because he is the hope of renewal. There's lots of parallels in these different myths. Many of these myths are really speaking about this idea that no matter how difficult things can be, what the myth reminds us that the world can change in an instant. The world can be different. There's a great moment in one of the book, The Two Towers of the Lord of the Rings. But there's a head of an old king, broken, and flowers have grown up around it. So it looks like the king is crowned in flowers. And one of the figures, Aragorn, says, "See, they will not rule forever. The king will come again. He is the king, but they don't know that." So and that sense of however dark things seem. And of course, we do live in a very difficult time in the world. So that quality of fiery hope that things will change, things can change. Now, it's not something to believe in or a concept to make ourselves. It's something to uncover, because as we uncover these inner energies, as we allow these energies to rise up in us, one of the qualities that arises is this fiery hope. This sense of connection to something bigger. And one of the ways of looking at that is to think about the once and future king. And in a way, this image here, which comes, is a replica of life-size image on Tintagel Head. Here's an image of Arthur, who is there and not there, and through whom the world can be seen. And in a way, that kind of quality of this standing figure holding the sword, head slightly bowed in concentration, who is here and not here, is an image of that mystery that we're touching into. And so that sense of reaching back into the past, being present in the center, enabling what is coming, what is emerging to arise, is the heart of what we're going to be doing in these 3 years. But for now, let's have lunch.